So, tangential to this, as a member of Starfleet International, the fan club, you get certain discounts. One is with Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which is clever.
One is with Star Trek porn.
No. One is with TrekDating.com, which I didn't know was a thing. And then eventually I become curious. I want to see who's on this site. So I start.
I'm sure Holly approves of that.
Well, I mean, no, it would have. She would have understood, but she knew. I knew where to quit. It's like create a password and a username. Like no, no, this is a bad idea.
My username is Vulcan Heat.
Vulcan Slav Women.
Vulcan Sex Slave 291516.
Riker's Little Riker.
Number one.
Right. I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Technically, this is not Deep Space Nine, although it may feel like it. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here today with my star... I'm just tongue-tied beyond speaking. I'm here with my fellow Deep Space Nine viewers. So we have Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello. Should we put tongue-tied in here by the cat from Red Dwarf? Tongue-tied, you got me tongue-tied. See, Paul won't know that because he doesn't watch Red Dwarf.
I don't. We have Dr. Bill Robinson.
Yeah, I think I developed a hyperboil on my face. Ouch.
That hyperboil's lasting a long time.
Get some mileage out of that joke.
And we have Mr. J. David Weider.
Hi, I'm in the Tholian web.
It's better than the dark web.
Oh, so if I phase out during the episode, everything is okay.
If you phase out during the episode, based on a pre-discussion, perhaps you got bored and fell asleep.
Don't rule it out. Do not rule that out.
Okay,
this might be the episode for that.
I'm gonna disagree to an extent, but we'll get to that in a moment. Right now, before we get to our episode, does anybody have any Star Trek stuff to talk about?
Isn't Discovery coming back the last week of December?
Would have come back, yeah.
Well, it is currently March 27th, 2019, so it came back. It was great.
That second season of Discovery sure was good, right?
Whew, yeah. Oh, and man, when happened and... That's a horrible beep.
When they de-aged William Shatner's appearance.
It sounds like Captain Pike was back the way you did that, Bill.
Well, he is. So.
Only the exposed to chemical explosion Captain Pike.
I did learn some behind the scenes information that I thought was quite interesting. You may all find it tedious as hell, but do you want to know it?
Sure. That's what we hear. Tedium.
I was listening to the 4:30 podcast, which is actually really very good. Mark Altman, who used to write for Cine Fantastic, and he has people on who are behind the scenes and working with producers and stuff like that. And they were saying that the reason that Star Trek Discovery had such a good budget for its first season was because Netflix swallowed the cost of production in exchange for overseas rights to the show. So the first season of Discovery did not cost CBS a dime.
Mm. Wow. How about season two? What are we doing with that one?
Season two is a co-production.
Oh, so we're going to have
they'll have half the budget.
Yeah, so either the budget's going to get cut, or Netflix looked at the data and thought, all right, we can't afford to sustain this on the viewers that it's getting, so it's now a co-production.
So can we expect 1980s Doctor Who special effects?
I think we can expect 1960s Star Trek special effects.
I don't think they'll slash it that much. I mean, I think they've learned enough going on how they can produce this stuff and it not be as expensive as perhaps the first season was. But I think the problem with that is you're now in a situation where television is competing with Game of Thrones. and HBO seem to have bottomless pockets. So you can't make a TV show that doesn't look up to those production values.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think, you know, they are setting a standard that's hard to match. But I think if you put out a quality product, it doesn't have to be all shiny and fancy all the time. I think Doctor Who is actually, and I haven't watched the last few seasons of Doctor Who, so I don't know if the production values have upgraded. But I think the at least the earlier seasons from a few years back are an example of that. They never really went with the really high budget special effects ever. And they pulled in an audience because they were putting out a good show.
Yeah, but there's not that expectation, I don't think, anymore. I think now TV is expected to look at least vaguely filmic.
You also I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you.
I was just going to say, the Jodie Whittaker season in particular does look more cinematic than Matt Smith's era. And Capaldi's looked more cinematic than Matt Smith, and this is another leap forward again. So,
yeah, I've watched about the first two or three episodes of this season. I have I'm just behind on watching, that's all. But it's been good.
You also have the fact that they have all the sets from the first season to work with now.
Yeah.
So the budget doesn't have to be quite as high because if they're working with those sets, they're already in existence. Anyways, I'm just looking forward to watching it in the past.
Yeah, I think it looks quite interesting from the little that we know about it so far.
Well, based on the first season, you know, I'm very optimistic about this. So, I guess that's it for our Star Trek discussion, and we might as well move on to Season 5, Episode 17, A Simple Investigation.
Law.
You tried to break into the station computer, why?
And order.
I can't believe what I got myself into.
You have to trust me.
I do trust you.
Passion.
I don't ever want to leave this room.
And secrets.
She's not who she seems to be.
Lies can be deadly.
As soon as we got the crystal, she dies.
But you can't protect me forever.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The original air date of this episode was March 31st, 1997. It is directed by John T. Kretschmer, written by René Echevarria.
Echevarria.
Whatever. It features guest appearances by Day Young, John Durbin, Nicholas Worth, and Randy Mulkey. The plot is that in Quarks, Odo meets a beautiful woman named Arissa and is impressed by her powers of observation. Later, he is surprised when the same woman is arrested for trying to break into the station's computer. Odo questions her about the man she was waiting for in Quarks, an Idarian named Tuvod Rem. Arissa tells Odo that Tauvid, has information about the daughter she gave up 15 years before. Odo takes her to Tauvid's quarters, where they discover he has been killed. Soon afterward, Odo catches Arissa retrieving a data crystal Tauvid hid. She admits to Odo that she didn't really have a daughter and tells him that she came to meet Tauvid because she wants to escape working for the Orion Syndicate, a notorious criminal organization. Her boss, a man named Dream, probably had Tauvid killed to keep her from getting the unknown information contained in the crystal. Odo hides Arissa in his quarters, and he begins an investigation. While Dax and O'Brien attempt to access the heavily protected data crystal, Arissa tells Odo how she began to work for Drame, only to want out when she learned the deadly consequences her assignments meant for others. Odo encourages her to testify against Drame and take back her life. That night, he returns to his quarters, where the two of them give in to their growing attraction to each other. Cue the music.
A life could be a dream.
That's not the music I was thinking of.
Well, because it put me to sleep.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking more along the lines of doo 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 doo.
After speeding back.
No.
That's what it sounded like.
I could do it like Adrian. Do 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 do.
Yeah, Adrian.
That's not how it goes. After spending a passionate night with Odo, Arissa sends a message to Drame proposing an exchange, the crystal for her life. Drame agrees, but instructs his hitmen, Trady and Sorm, to kill her after the crystal is retrieved. Meanwhile, an Idanian official arrives, informing Odo that Arissa is not who she appears to be, but actually an Idanian agent given a new identity in order to infiltrate Drame's organization. Even Arissa does not know this, since her memory has been erased. The crystal contains her real memories. The Idanian asks to be taken to Orisa, and Odo quickly complies, only to find both the woman and the crystal missing. Orisa prepares to give Trady the crystal in exchange for her life, but just as he and Sorm are to kill her, Odo and the Idanian save Orisa. Later, her memories and true appearance are restored. She and Odo then meet one last painful time, after which Orisa returns to her married life, and Odo is left heartbroken. Poor Odo. Now, I'm not going to argue with you guys that this is a slow-moving episode and that it takes a while to get through it, but I kind of enjoyed the whole Odo, you know, back to what we had before, where he's like the unknowledgeable teenager and he doesn't know how to go about even letting her know that he likes her. And, you know, I enjoyed that. My biggest problem with this episode is just that after what we left off the last few episodes, I want more. I want the ongoing storyline to develop more. And it's just like, you know what? We're going to forget that's even going on and just go to this other story that could take place any time in the 7 years the show is on.
It's literally like a showstopper. You're like, we're moving along in. Wham! Oh, my God. We just hit a plot truck. What happened?
Yeah, it's like when Babylon 5 had that big storyline going on where Babylon 5 broke away from Earth and then they did an episode with Dr. Franklin in Down Below. And you're like, why are you doing this here? And it's not that this is in and of itself a bad episode. It isn't. It's well written. It's well acted. The dialogue is very rat-a-tat-tat, like the old 40s stuff and like moonlighting and all that shit. Mm-hmm. It's just it's in the wrong place. This should have been when Odo was a solid, if you'll pardon the expression.
That would have been better. And maybe it was written to be in that. But, you know, the pacing that they had set up for the season kind of interfered with it.
It's possible that this was an earlier script that got put back. I just think that from Odo's development as a character, it would have made much more sense for this to be when he was a human or humanoid rather than a shapeshifter. That he's actually running the whole gamut of human emotions, including falling in love with someone and having sex with them. And I think that would have been more impactful if it had happened back then. Having it here, like Bill said, it's like you just drop down in your gears when you're driving. It's like you just drop down from fifth gear to second gear and the car judders as it slows down abruptly. And that's what this one felt like. After the last couple of episodes, which were all five starers, this felt just out of place. But it isn't, taken on its own, it isn't a bad episode, or I don't think it is. I just don't think this is what we wanted now.
One of the things that kept coming back to me about this episode is I kept thinking about how lacking of chemistry it was when they tried to put Vash into Next Generation as a love interest, and I thought she was just such a zero of a character. This character, who we had very, very little time with, you could almost feel the chemistry between her and Rene Auberjonois. She was attractive. You can understand why he would be attracted to her. You know, it made sense, unlike other times when they put other characters out there. You know, every love interest for Kira, you're like, why do these two like each other? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, why is she with this massive bell end?
So at least here we had something where it made sense to me, and like you could sense the chemistry. So yeah. I almost would have preferred her to be some sort of an ongoing character so that he had an ongoing love interest, and now you could set up the kind of triangle with where now Kira starts realizing she has feelings for him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the actress was well cast in what she was doing, given that it is one and done. And I think her and Rene Auberjonois bounced off each other really quite well. I think I would have preferred more of that, like the scene in the middle where she goes to security to speak to Odo. There's a scene in the middle of the episode that is very bounced back and forth in the dialogue. And I would have liked more of them. And I think, like you say, if they'd have done this over a couple of episodes back when he was a solid and then had this episode, it would have had more impact. And I love that they cast an actress who's roughly the same age as Rene Auberjonois. So he's not romancing some 20-year-old hottie. He's actually with a mature woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And a mature, attractive woman, which is, yeah. You know, in Hollywood, they seem to have a problem with that. You know, they don't mind us men aging gracefully and being attractive. But for some reason, the women, they're like, oh, no, she's 30. She's too old.
No. So that was really good. And it was well done between the two of them. And there is some lovely little character bits in it. The bit where Dax and Kira are gossiping in Ops was really fun.
Yeah, and then Worf, they tell Odo, Worf rather, come up and gossip with us.
And Worf's like, it is not civilized to gossip in Ops. And Worf's just really funny in it. And so there was lots of lovely little bits. And the whole Bashir being James Bond again was hysterical. When he's supposed to be driving in the limo and Odo's face just appears at the side of him and you've got Chief O'Brien at the other side, I'm here to kill you. Oh, hi, Odo. And then he just goes right back into character. So there was some really good character moments in it. It's not a bad episode. I just think it's really ill-placed. I think that's our problem with it, or my problem with it.
Well, okay, I'm totally with you then. You and I are not disagreeing. It's Bill who I hate.
It's Bill's turn this week.
The first time I watched this a couple weeks ago, I watched it all the way through and I was fine. But when I went back to watch it again last night, I just could not get through this. It was just so... Yes, there are moments that are good. And I was fast-forwarding to the two hitmen and the holodeck.
Yeah, they were funny. I liked them.
They were
those.
Great. And I want to talk about them at some point. The two actors that play the hitmen. Well, I guess I could just step out and do that now. One is a guy, the beefier of the two is Nicholas Wirth. And if you think, well, I don't know who that guy is, well, you probably do. He's been in he's been in Star Trek before. He's been in multiple movies. I think the first role that I remember him from was from the Swamp Thing movie as Bruno. He's the guy that when Louis Jardin gives him the formula, it turns him into, you know, he's a big, muscular, beefy guy, and it basically shrinks his body and turns him into a dwarf, because it's the whole thing about the Swamp Thing formula was it, you know, enhances the essence of what you are, blah, 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 as Louis Jardin speak. So do you guys remember that movie or the scene I'm discussing?
If I remember that movie, it's because of Adrian Barbeau.
Oh, well, yeah, that is too... Two things that are difficult to see past. I mean,
but I did love those two. I particularly love the scene where they kill that guy and go, look at the mess you've made.
Yeah. He looks at his gun. Oh, I thought I had it on stun.
I thought I had it on skinny.
It's a well put together, well written, well constructed episode, and I think it does a love story well, which Star Trek has struggled with in its 90s incarnations. You know, the 60s one did them all the time and did them well. This Side of Paradise is a brilliant love story for Mr. Spock, and City on the Edge of Forever for Captain Kirk. But the new ones, they always felt a little bit dry. Like Paul's mentioned, Vash and Picard didn't really have a lot of chemistry. He had more chemistry with Gates McFadden, yet they seem to step away from that. And the Data Falls in Love with Susan Francisco episode was just so meh. And I never bought Will Wheaton with Ashley Judd.
Well, nobody's going to buy that.
Well, that's true. This one, I actually believed the two of them liked each other, which is nice.
Right there with you. I think they had a good thing going, but this does not pass the repeated viewings test, I said before we started, I was watching this, fell asleep, decided, you know what, I'm going to go watch an episode of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I watched the whole episode, came back, fell asleep again.
You know, I think you cure this episode. I think what you do is, as much as I agree with you, Andy, I really enjoyed the subplot with the James Bond thing. Maybe you save that for another day and you come up with a subplot that ties into the Dominion War.
Mm.
Now you feel the continuity of the episodes, and this one feels like it's placed correctly.
Yeah, I think that would work better if you did have a subplot that was advancing the overall story out. But I think that plays into what we've discussed, that this just feels out of place here.
Mm-hmm. But I think if it didn't feel out of place, I think it would feel better for you guys. I think you would rate it higher if you were not sensing the slowdown in the pacing from the previous two episodes.
See, I think we're all roughly in the same place. Me and you, Paul, don't disagree that it's a bad episode. Me and Bill agree it's not one that holds up to repeated viewings. But taken in and of itself, it's not at all awful, or I didn't think it was.
I don't know if I'm flipping through the dial, if I'm doing the flick test, I'm not sure if I stop. But I'm also not sure that I keep going. This one is kind of like right on the border for me.
I think it depends on the scene you're stopping at.
It also depends on what else I've seen as I'm marching up the dial and I get to this. When I get to this one, what have I already seen that's on that I may want to go back to?
Yeah.
If I haven't seen anything that catches my interest, I'm stopping at this one. What I generally do is I flip through the dial, and then when I see something that interests me, I press on it. And then I keep going up the dial, and if I haven't seen anything I need, I just press last channel, and I'm back to it.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, I think if you land on the scene in Ops with Jadzia and Kira, you're leaving it on for at least that couple of minutes. I think if it's a scene where Odo's in bed with her, you're like, next.
Oh God!
Oh, that's we don't need naked Odo ever.
No,
that just super weird.
I'm always amazed that Odo has no problem doing complex hands with fingerprints and stuff, and nipples and backbones, but he can't do a face.
I think this was what would have been a good ongoing subplot put into a single episode, and that was its big weakness: is that it was a good subplot, not a good A plot.
Mm.
But not awful. Not an awful, unwatchable.
No, it wasn't. No, you're right. It wasn't awful. Yeah, that might have been better if they stretched out a few episodes.
Well, as a subplot, and you could break it down over like three episodes. You almost have it like the Hulk in the recent Marvel movies. You don't want to give him his own movie, but you just give his story ongoing in the other ones. Then you could do the thing, like I said, and start having Kira say, you know, I like that Odo, but he's busy with this other woman now, so he's not available. It might be interesting to have that.
But then the ending of the episode where she says, I'm married, I have to leave you, would have more impact. Because it didn't move me as much as it should have.
It did. Well, you know what? It's just like... It did move me from the Odo perspective, but from her perspective, I just felt like, I don't know, she's been gone from him for years, apparently, and they haven't given us any reason to understand their relationship, so I really couldn't care less from her perspective. It was just from Odo's point of view where I felt like, poor high school-level romance Odo is getting kicked down again.
And your two-day whirlwind romance.
Yeah, literally.
But you know what? Like I said, I put Odo at the level of maturity romantically as a high school student. And in 2 days, you could be madly in love when you're in high school.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was having a flashback.
If only the person you were in love with knows that you were in love with.
Yeah,
it would be all the more helpful.
Or what's worse is when you tell them and they're like, hey, I just want to be friends. At least Odo got out of the friend zone.
Yeah, he got
into the bed zone.
I think what bothers me is this also feels derivative of the episode where Riker fell in love with the androgynous species.
Oh, no, this is better than that.
Is it?
I hated that episode.
Yeah, but it uses the exact same, it's paint by numbers from that template, though.
Yes,
no, I think there's emotion in this one that didn't exist in that one.
But there's also the thing in the Riker episode. Was it the Outcast? The Riker episode loses itself too much in being worthy in what it's saying rather than concentrating on telling a good story that gets the point across anyway. And that's my problem with the Outcast.
One of the things I really enjoyed in this episode, and you don't have that in the Outcast, is Odo's vulnerability. That Riker never had any vulnerability on that stuff, but after they do finally, you know, bump ugly, he's like, it's the first time, could you tell? I just thought that was great.
Let me just shatter this mood.
Yeah, I know Riker actually knows he has bedroom eyes.
Yeah, she tells him he has bedroom eyes. He's walking around. He's like,
looking at me.
She said, I'm cute.
Yeah, and other than Wesley, this is the only character you can do that kind of teen-level romance with. So, I don't want to say it didn't work in the same way that I personally didn't feel the Outcast worked. Not just on a story level where I felt, like I said, they were too interested in wrapping themselves up in being progressive to the point that they forgot they should be telling a story. It's like the same thing with Luke Cage season one. But I didn't feel anything from Melinda Cooley and Jonathan Frakes. I mean, I loved her in the A-Team, but I didn't think she gave anything in the Outcast that worked, whereas these two, it worked. And also in the Outcast, Riker should have been drummed out of Starfleet after that. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, most of everybody on these shows should have been drummed out of Starfleet for all the stupid stuff they've done.
How many times should Miles have been run out for
disobeying
orders?
This week, we were discussing with the show that went up was Worf on Risa. Hello? Messing with the planetary weather system, Mr. Worf. I don't know if I suddenly became an English magistrate.
Why are you doing an impression of Patrick Stewart?
That was not my Patrick Stewart impression.
What?
Then who was it? I don't know.
Maybe I was doing Terry Thomas.
Yeah. What is this obsession you have with bosoms?
That's an excellent Terry Thomas impersonation. I doff my cap to both of you. That was, I never thought we'd reference Terry Thomas on a Star Trek podcast.
I say, old boy.
Love Terry Thomas.
Who doesn't love Terry Thomas?
I bet you half the listeners who don't know who Terry Thomas is.
If you don't know who Terry Thomas is, you need to go and watch Danger Diabolic, because not only is it brilliant, but Terry Thomas is in it.
There's one-fourth of the people on this podcast that don't know who he is.
One of my favorite ever comedies, It's a Mad World.
Mad World, yes.
Oh, got it.
That's in my top 10 movies of all time, by the way.
Cool.
I love that movie, and he's brilliant in it.
And Terry Thomas was quite the lover.
Just like Odo.
Way to segue us right back, Andy. Good job.
So has anyone here ever been told they have bedroom eyes?
Yes.
No.
Oh. I've been told I have tired eyes. Is that the same thing?
All right, so me and Dave, so who told you you had bedroom eyes?
Which time?
Okay.
Whoa. Oh, let me also clarify. I'm talking about in my early 20s.
Oh, yeah, me too.
They haven't told me that since, which is...
Twice. Now I have, luggage eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Legit eyes.
Bags of luggage. Is that a steamer trunk under your eyes? What is that?
I was told I have bathroom eyes.
It's like, what are you squinting? Oh, I gotta go!
No, avoid number two.
Now, my boss told me that when I was in... I think I was like 18 or 19 working at the pizza place. And she's like, she just looks at me. She's like in her 30s or something. She just looks at me and goes, ugh. I'm like, what? She's like, you in your bedroom eyes. And I'm like, huh? What? What do you mean? I don't understand.
Bill, we don't want to hear about your penthouse forum letter.
No, but I later dated her niece. But anyway, pop. Yeah, he went. Okay, all right. Move along home.
Alan Moraine.
Oh, we can beat Andy to it.
I'm very disappointed.
He's too busy drawing a gap between his teeth to do a Terry Thomas impersonation.
Yes, I am. I think this week's episode, the picture should be Terry Thomas.
And people go, what? Who's that? I say, I have bedroom eyes.
Do you know, I think you should add that to your repertoire of regular impressions.
I'll work on it.
You have to start every sentence with, I say.
I say.
Actually, you do Terry Thomas better than I do.
It's like if you do a Michael Caine impression, you have to end every sentence with bloody.
Yep.
See, I'm starting to wonder if I set myself up to dislike this episode, because as I was telling everybody before we began the recording proper, I watched the wrong episode because I grabbed the wrong disc out of the case, which was a stronger episode altogether. I'm not going to say which one, but it was a later episode.
I don't want to say which one. It was The Emissary, the first episode ever.
I'm saying it was Soldiers of the Empire, but this one, I mean...
I'm not saying it was that one.
I'm not
but
saying
if
that.
It was.
It would be a much stronger episode. And to come back to this episode, which is a it doesn't explore as much in terms of the Star Trek mythos.
Oh, I was going to say, well... Never mind.
Well, I mean,
there was that bedroom scene.
Well, yeah, and how freaky is it? How freaky is it when he starts to merge her hand and she reacts? That made me feel actually legitimately uncomfortable.
Yeah. It was because I'm thinking, is this just the hand? Oh my god!
Yeah.
Well, once you've slept with a shape changer, you're never going back.
Well, I mean, they could be all you need.
Wait. Stop. Here, maybe this should be the tagline for the show. There's always room for Jell-O.
.com.
So what else have we got?
I don't think there's a lot else to this one. I don't think there is. I mean, at least in The Outcast, there is subtext that rapidly becomes text. There's nothing in this one, really. It is exactly what it pretends to be.
So the taller of the two hitmen, I wanted to talk about him real quick. His name's John Durbin, but I kept thinking he was another actor from the 70s, and I looked that guy up. And the guy I was thinking he was trying to describe some roles that you remember him from. From Buck Rogers, remember the one, what was it, Death of a City? They had the tall guy that had the black thing in the tall like guy that could phase through the walls.
Oh, yeah.
And he was also in Unforgiven. He's been in a lot of westerns. He always plays the quiet, creepy, sleazy villain. that's who I thought, and the actor's name is Anthony James, but that's not who this was. It was actually a man named John Durbin, and he's actually been in a, he also plays a tall, creepy, he was an Angel, he's been in Voyager, looking at a few other things. He was in the Shining TV series, obviously Deep Space Nine, trying to see if he was in, he was in Next Generation. He played it. He played Gull Lumek in Chain of Command, so he was one of the two, multiple Cardassians there. So, he was in Max Headroom also.
Oh, very good. I like Max Headroom.
He's been around. He was in the A-Team, yeah, and Moonlighting. So he's one of those guys. So probably out of makeup, you would be like, oh, yeah, I recognize this guy, as well as the other gentleman I mentioned, Mr. James. Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Rick James. Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Well, Anthony James was the first Romulan we saw in The Next Generation, wasn't he? With Mark Alamer in the Neutral Zone. Yep.
I thought that was Andrea Casales, whatever, as
Tomalak. That's Tomalak. You're the Neutral Zone, where we first see the Romulans again. There are two Romulans on the view screen. One's Mark Alamer, and the other's Anthony James.
Hmm. Okay.
Now we know.
Yes. Del Young was in Spaceballs?
What?
Day Young. Arisa.
As who?
I don't know. It just says, I'm looking at her filmography and it says Spaceballs. Oh, yeah. She was in The Running Man, too. She was one of the women in the hallway that talks to Maria Conchita Alonso about, did you have sex with him? No. Man, she was in Serpent and a Rainbow.
She the one who says, something like, he could have killed you.
I think you. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Or raped you and killed you. I'm gonna have to see The Running Man again just to see what she looked like.
If you just type her name in and just do images, one of the ones that popped up, because I saw that image and it's there in the hallway where she's, and she's got like glasses on.
But I was thinking, it would have been, you see her at a younger age, but it's not that much younger because this is 20 years ago. So
right now we're all searching Google.
Day Young naked.
That's what got Bill into trouble. Knock it off.
Make sure you're in incognito mode. It's perfect. I've heard.
.com.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she is the one who has that conversation with Maria Conchita Alonso. Why don't you tell more lies?
Well, Spaceball. Okay, let me see where she was in Spaceballs. Doesn't really. What? No, she wasn't the nurse. No. Hello, nurse. Oh, she doesn't have glasses. She's got the press. She's holding a pin. She's got a press pass on. So yeah. She's got like the beige suit, and she's standing behind when they're looking up the hallway up at Arnold. Probably that's not her, is it?
No, I think it is her.
That's not her. What? No, I'm looking at the Spaceballs picture. That's not.
No, she was in Rock and Roll High School.
Rock and Roll High School. Oh, sorry, Paul.
When you guys were in town, we did go to the Queens Museum, which is
we did.
The Ramones all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Had the big Ramones thing.
It's almost the Joey Ramone Museum.
I so badly wanted, and it would be horrible and destructive. I so badly wanted to walk through that giant room with the like scale model of Manhattan. I wanted to walk through that like Godzilla. Andy would love that. Love that room. Yeah, it's how big is that room, Paul?
I don't have measurements, but it's huge.
High school gymnasium size, maybe bigger.
Yeah. Right, and all up around there's like these glass walkways, and it's the entire island of Manhattan, and I think a couple of the boroughs, right? Or all the boroughs in Manhattan.
Oh, look, the boroughs are in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and it takes you, I don't know, I could have probably, it's so intricate and detailed, and it's back when they still had the Twin Towers, and it's just it's massive. Yeah, okay, I've just really killed that, so move along.
I just remember getting really nervous because of the glass bottle.
Oh, yeah, especially when I was up there.
Well, even Paul started getting nervous when you start realizing some of those are replaced by wooden planks. There's a reason for that.
That's where Bill fell through. All right, so getting back to A Simple Investigation, my quote of the day we've already made mention of is, I thought it was unstung. Because that made me just, it seemed so, just predictable that he was going to say that, but it still made me, give a little laugh. So that was my quote of the episode.
I thought you'd be tall.
Mine's O'Brien as Falcon. Car trouble, Mr. Bashir. Oh, I owed him. I genuinely laughed out loud at that.
Yeah, mine was the
stunt quote. Oh, go ahead, Bill.
Oh, yeah, I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with Paul that the stunt quote was my favorite.
It was my first time, can you tell?
Dave has said that about 20 times.
Yeah, works every time.
Does it work? Yeah.
It's part of his shtick.
Well, I got that from Airplane. If we're going to die, I don't want to die a virgin.
That works.
Dave whips out a cigarette. Like two, hands one. It was my first time, can you tell?
So, do we want to rate?
Yes, why not?
All right. I agree with what you said about the pacing of the season, but I enjoyed this episode. So, you know, my standard with a 5 scale, 2.5 is dead average. I'm going to give it a 3.0 and say I enjoyed watching it.
I'm going to go with a 2.5. It was very, by the numbers, not a lot of rewatch value.
I keep vacillating between 2.5 and 3. I think part of my problems with it aren't a problem with the actual episode. It is just where it's placed. The actual episode in and of itself is fine, but it has no rewatch value, so I'll go 2.5.
Yeah, I have to go with 2.5 as well.
I have to go with what everybody else wants to do.
Shut up. It's good on its first watch, but not on a rewatch, and overall it just was a plot stopper for the you know, we got in the groove of the continuing narrative and oof. So yeah, you know what? 2.25 phasers set on stun. Whoops.
All right, I'll make mine 2.75 then, just to balance out his ridiculous scoring.
I'll give it a 2.
I say
I'm giving it a 5. So that's what we say, but what does Blaine say?
Blaine says, let's go see what Blaine says. Blaine says it's time to read his email. Paula,
who's Paula?
I'm waiting for Paula to start reading it.
I had to rhyme it.
It was bad, and the harmony was not up to its usual level, by the way.
Blaine says,
time to take the stage, but Blaine says.
Okay, Blaine says, hi guys, this is another character positioning episode. We see Odo is guilty about working alongside the Cardassians in the past, but more importantly, we learn that he's willing and able to have an intimate relationship with a humanoid solid. I wonder if that's ever going to matter down the road. We also get the return of Bashir's holodeck activities for a nice little continuity nod. This is another case where, knowing what is to come, I see and respect the end goals, but wish it had just been a little bit more entertaining along the way. It feels like they've been trying to build up the Orion Syndicate as well as a well-oiled machine and a legitimate player in the Alpha Quadrant. But having a somewhat dim assassin along in one of our first meetings with their actual operatives undermines that goal. Yeah, we didn't really discuss that. Having the assassins be kind of, you know, Laurel and Hardy-ish as they're doing their deeds doesn't necessarily help to make them seem as threatening as they should. I mean, they should be seeming like the space mafia, very efficient.
The job done, you know.
Well, they didn't though. And
they killed the operative early in the episode.
And when they killed the operative early in the episode, it was by mistake. So it doesn't really make them seem as lethal and efficient as they should.
Hey, you go out there day and night trying to, you know, muscle people up and.
In our next episode, which we're going to obviously discuss in 2 weeks, there's a much more efficient death, and it's not even done on screen, and it seems more lethal. You know, this one almost seems like, I said my face is wrong. You know, they don't seem as in the final showdown scene, you don't see them as being, you know, deadly precise in their killing methods, and oh my god, how is she going to get out of this? It's like, okay, what are these two, you know, buffoons going to do? You know, Inspector Clouseau would probably beat them, so let's see what happens.
I mean we found them funny, but yeah, possibly not very threatening.
Yeah, funny in that I enjoyed that moment, but I think it may have taken away from their overall threat level. Not may have, it definitely did take away from their overall threat level.
Yeah.
So, good point, Blaine. And
And email is over.
Anything else?
We've turned off the email, Blaine says.
Yeah, I'm just not feeling it now, Andy.
Okay. such prima donnas.
Paul doesn't like my singing. It's okay.
Why did you sound like Christopher Lloyd then? Paul doesn't like my singing. That didn't sound like Christopher Lloyd.
He doesn't like it.
Christopher Lloyd would... God, it actually had something in my throat. Jeez. Okay, maybe it was a touch of hyperboil again.
Has anybody else got anything before the audience decides they're going to turn us off before we turn ourselves off?
No, not with this one, I'm afraid.
All right, then what are we doing next time?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, it's business as usual for Quark and a lot of scenery chewing from Stephen Burkoff.
It's an offer Quark can't refuse.
You want me to sell weapons, don't you?
But success doesn't come cheap.
$28 million
on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Victor Maitland.
I'm more excited that we have Lawrence Tierney in this.
Yeah, very
very out of place. Very out of place. But we'll talk more about that in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
So long.
Kapla.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Bill, you just became Han Solo.
You're a bad person.
You ticked off the Russian conglomerate.
What?
You just became Han Solo. You ticked off the Russian mob.
Yeah, true.
You're a very bad person. And I don't like you either, Leyland.
Well, that's all right. I'm wanted men. I've got the death sentence in 12 systems.
You'll be dead.
I want to be the walrus guy.